Hello there. Welcome to the Expressive Mom Show, and today we're going to be covering autism. Miriam Slosberg here with you, and very, very happy to be with you. So like I said, we're going to be covering autism, and I'm going to be interviewing the owner of Autism Village. His name is Topher Wirtz, and Topher has been around the block a few times in the world of business, where he was known for bringing together marketing, technology, and teamwork. And after learning his son Kirby had autism, he was floored. He and his family had become one of the 2.8 million families in the U.S. who have been affected by autism. Wirtz didn't know where to turn. In his mind, there wasn't much out there to help him understand autism and how to cope with all the problems that come with it. Most importantly, he didn't know where to go for help, even though he had carefully reviewed the offerings from the 5 known U.S. autism organizations, such as Autism Speaks and Autism Society of America. So putting his entrepreneurial hat on, he invented Autism Village. And Topher is going to be telling us what Autism Village is. And I'd love to take this opportunity to welcome Topher. Hello, Topher. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being on. So I'd love to know what Autism Village is. I mean, this sounds pretty cool from just what little I have read about it, but could you tell us what it is and what it offers?
Absolutely. So Autism Village is a project that we've been working on as a not-for-profit organization that will help the autism community with the practical day-to-day problems of living with autism. And our first release come out this summer is an app that's like Yelp or TripAdvisor, but just for autism, where the autism community can add, rate, and review places for their level of autism friendliness so that other families on the journey or autistic adults, adults with autism, can find those places and know where to go that's going to be autism friendly.
Well, that's great. Now, my question is, will it be available outside of the U.S.?
Yeah, the service works anywhere in the world. So,
great.
Where anybody adopts it and puts stuff in, other people will be able to discover it. So, you know, we are dependent on folks finding the service useful and adding places into it. But we believe that because it will be a mobile app, both on iPhone and Android, that it'll be convenient and lots of people will add everything from playgrounds to professionals like dentists to barbers or restaurants or schools or therapists, and all of this will essentially make the water cooler, bigger and global, so that families can find stuff that's going to be friendly for their children with autism, or if you're an adult with autism, to yourself.
That's great. I think that's wonderful. So, could you tell us more about your journey, if you don't mind, and how you just decided to create this?
Yeah, I guess things really, the idea started to gestate for me when my own son, who's moderate on the autism spectrum, was transitioning from preschool age to school age. And there was a big meeting, with families who had children on the spectrum who were there to learn about what would be happening as they entered the school district and the school-age programs. And when I looked around the room, I saw a lot of single moms with their children with autism along with them, and a lot of people from all different economic backgrounds, all different educational backgrounds. You know, autism doesn't discriminate. And over the years of raising our own son, I never forgot that. And it occurred to me that while lots of organizations were working on finding causes or cures, or other organizations were focused on building technology or applications to help with therapy or education, a huge problem for families raising kids with autism and then adults with autism were just the practical day-to-day things. And that could range from tracking data or coordinating a team or communications with a teacher, that sort of thing. And so one of the biggest ones, though, was just I realized people were afraid sometimes to even leave their house. And so The first thing we set out to do was solve that problem. So with this app, you'll be able to, based on your location or a location that you're traveling to, see ratings and reviews from other people, and know where's a good place to go to eat or to for an attraction or a park or anything.
Wow. I mean, I think that's really, really cool. I mean, hats off to you, really. Now, before we talk more about this particular app, let's talk a little more about autism. So in your own words, how do you define autism?
Well, autism is a neurological difference that seems to exist from before birth and emerges in people maybe within the first 2-3 years of life. And people with autism, they think differently. It doesn't mean that the way they think is right or wrong, but the way they approach the world is different. And sometimes they have some challenges, for example, with sensory inputs and overloads or with adapting to schedule or environmental changes and so forth. And, you know, a lot of those things can be managed either by the person themselves or the people around them or the places where they go. And so, you know, it's I like the thing that goes around on social media that says sort of autism is like a different operating system than the rest of us. It's not bad. It's just different.
It's just different, right. Okay. Well, that's very true. It's just different. Because I have a son who has mild autism. He's actually more impacted by ADHD than that, but he's on the higher functioning level. Like, he talks, but he certainly has his own way of coping, if you will. He has his own way, and he's quite independent. So, you know, it autism affects children and adults in different ways. You know, you can't compare one child with autism to the next or one adult with autism to the next. It affects everyone who has it very differently. So now, what do you think causes autism? I mean, this is nobody really knows, but what are your thoughts?
You know, we have never, my wife and I together, have never really landed on a specific idea or opinion. You know, we meet lots of people that have ideas, opinions. Some of them are kind of kooky seeming to us. Others seem like they might be truth, but since there's no good evidence or otherwise, and since really it doesn't matter once you're raising a child on the spectrum, what the cause is, you know, it's about tomorrow and making tomorrow better. We've always been very pragmatic, so we really don't have a point of view or a philosophy about causes. We just focus on making tomorrow and the next day better and better for our son Kirby.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, how old is Kirby now?
So Kirby just turned 13 in March, and he has an older brother, Zandy, who's 11 months his senior, who's 14, who's neurotypical. And he's healthy and happy, and we have some language and a little bit of conversation. And it's a challenge in the teenage, as we're now entering the teenage years. It's a new phase for sure.
Yes. Yeah, my son's 11, so it's going to be interesting, that's for sure. How is Andy with Kirby?
Zandy and Kirby are good buds. It's an interesting relationship because it isn't typical in the sense that you would expect two boys that are so close in age maybe to be sort of like two musketeers. It's not like that. But Kirby very much pays attention and looks up to Zandy, and Zandy is very much aware of what's going on with Kirby, even if it might be from across a playground, or they both do Boy Scouts, they're in sort of brother troops. One troop's all kids on the spectrum, and Zandy's part of a neurotypical troop, and he'll be aware of what's happening with Kirby and the ASD kids, and he can get into sort of protective mode. So it's really interesting. The roles change, but they're very close as brothers.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, I have a daughter who's 13 as well, and she's neurotypical. So she has her frustrations with my son, but at the same time, she does care about his well-being. So it's quite interesting. Now, when did you notice the autism in Kirby? When did you suspect something was quote-unquote off?
Well, to be absolutely truthful, we can't take credit for that. The when Kirby was just under 2 years old, because the kids came so close together and I was in a job that required a lot of international travel, we had a young lady from New Zealand helping us for a year with the kids, and she had been a preschool teacher in New Zealand, and she recognized behaviors in Kirby that reminded her of kids in her preschool back in New Zealand that had autism. And so you can imagine for her the challenge. A very brave young lady. She spoke to some friends of ours about it, and they encouraged her just to talk to us directly. And she did, mm-hmm. and she shared some of the behaviors that she felt, you know, might be the case. And you know, we're pragmatic people, so we listened and we researched, and the Easter Seals group in our area does early diagnosis, and they came out and evaluated him and concurred with her, and we began to get him services. And over time, what were, you know, sort of quirky baby toddler behaviors became more pronounced, and it was clear that he was classically autistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds very similar to how my son was. And, I mean, he's come so far ahead. He's miles and miles ahead of where he was then. So, you know, there's hope. There's always hope. Now, do you think that boys are more likely to have autism than girls?
Well, statistically, it certainly seems to be the case. I believe the U.S. stats now are 1 in 68 births overall, and that's accelerated from the time that my own son was diagnosed 11 years ago, when it was 1 in 150 or 175. And in that 1 in 68 in the U.S., now they're saying it's, if you take out the girls, it's 1 in 42 boys. So it definitely seems to be more of a boys' issue than a girls' issue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. But it's happening more and more, and I think they're going to be seeing differences later on as well, and the statistics are certainly going to change in the future. So I know we touched on this just before, but let's talk a little bit about the different degrees of autism, if you don't mind.
Sure. Well, autism is a very wide spectrum. So at the one end of the spectrum, you have people that are able to function more or less within the group of their peers, their typical peers, and you know, maybe they're a little quirky, they don't make eye contact, or have some odd behaviors, or are somewhat rigid in how they like things ordered, or that sort of thing. And at the other end of the spectrum, you have kids and people that really need full-time support and are often even too much for their own families to raise from a young age, and sometimes mixed with other disabilities like seizures or physical disabilities. So, and along that spectrum, you have kids that are verbal or nonverbal that are that can get agitated and be self-injurious, and, you know, to kids that are happy and healthy, and but just have language issues or social issues.
Yeah.
So, as you said, if you've met one, you've met one. They're all different.
Yeah, they're all different. Okay. Thanks for sharing that. Now, I'm going to ask a question that I think make a lot of parents uncomfortable, but this is something that everybody has got to face. If you have a child with autism or any disability, you really have to focus on future planning. So have you thought about that, Topher?
Oh, sure. We think about it every day, and we try and save. In the U.S., there's at the national level, they've just recently passed a thing called the ABLE Act, which makes it more sort of helpful to save for these futures. While we don't know exactly what our future will bring for Kirby in terms of how independent he'll be able to be, and what level of support he'll need if mm-hmm. You know, and when we try and be responsible about at least preparing for that financially. But it's a tall order. These kids are estimated, the USGAO estimates that the cost to the families are about $17,000 a year for the kids, and that overall the kids cost the government system about $70,000 per kid. So it's hard to save, you know, when you think of that $17,000 is 35% of the U.S. median income. And so when you think about that, it really is hard to save. And it's a big issue for parents, as you say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the best thing to do, what I've been doing, is just getting involved in the community service. They actually help you plan along. And I'm in Canada, so it might be different here than it is in the U.S., but I've been finding that there's a lot that they're offering, and they are helping me with the future. Because, I mean, the thing is, the goal is to make them as independent as absolutely possible. So they may end up being quite independent later on. I mean, it also, like you said, it depends on the degree of autism too. But if they're on the higher end, then there's absolutely no reason why not. And even some with the lower end they may be able to work. They may be able to do some things. I mean, you just don't know, like you said. But it is something that you got to certainly plan on. You know, there are investments like RDSPs and all that you know, parents really need to, like, they just need to plan ahead, because the last thing that they want is to worry about them when they are barely able to take care of themselves. I'm talking about the parents when they get to that point, you know. And they don't want to have their typically developing children having to worry about them either. I mean, it's very important to plan. And like you said, they could pleasantly surprise you too. You just don't know. But you do have to plan. As they say, hope for the best, but prepare for the worst, right?
Well, I think you're right. And I do think that we spend a lot of our time in the Maritime Provinces, and I'm in a small business there. And I think that Canada is ahead of the United States in some of the areas. We see some of the support, depending on the province and locale, varies obviously. Yeah. But I think that you are ahead, certainly in the more metropolitan areas. That support is there, but even we see in Nova Scotia, there's a very active autism organization and community. So I think that's right, and I think that the trick with when you have a brother, sister, or brothers and sisters that are typically developing is you don't want to get in a situation where those kids feel like they have some resentment or animosity towards their brother or sister with autism, because in the end, while you don't want to burden them, certainly they are going to be around to be the closest relative after the parents go. So trying to preserve that good brother-sister, you know, relationship is really, I think, also important.
It's very important. And we have to remember that our typically developing kids are going to have lives of their own. What if they want to live abroad? I mean, they have that right. What if you want to live abroad? What if, you know, the parent wants to have, they want to retire like everyone else? They have the right. So in order to do that, you got to plan. You really got to plan. And you got to work with the community. I mean, it's very, very important, because you have to, firstly, plant your feet on the ground and realize that they're going to need help even if they have autism. But the thing is, if they're doing really well, they may not need much of it. But you have to get things started at a young age. Like, you absolutely do. I can't stress that enough to families. I absolutely can't. Because so many of them end up finding that, you know, once their child with autism turns 18 and they haven't done anything, then that's it. They're not going to be able to have an easy time planning then. You got to plan it long before that.
Yeah, I think you can't say that enough. And it's difficult when you're sort of in the midst of it all to take the time to do that. But it's absolutely critical.
Yes. Okay. Now I'm going to ask a question that I know a lot of people are going to have different opinions on. Well, what are your thoughts? If there was a cure for autism, would you take it?
You know, that's a really interesting hypothetical, and certainly it's always a contentious conversation. We've talked about it a lot, and I can officially say that we don't know. You know, when faced with that, we're not sure what we would do. And of course, there's those that are adamant that this is you know, that this is almost destructive to who they are, and certainly that's the higher functioning group. And then you have you know, we see parents that are raising kids that are much deeper in the spectrum, that are nonverbal, that you know, and obviously those guys feel strongly that if such a thing existed, of course they would take it. So because the spectrum's wide, it's possible there's not even one answer to that question.
And I think, you know what, Temple Grandin, as we all know who she is, actually felt the same way. She said for the higher functioning folks, they wouldn't take it. But for the lower functioning folks, she can understand. You know, and she's one remarkable woman. And she, I'd say, is definitely the exception because, you know what, she was motivated. And that's the other thing, too. Children that have autism that are on the higher end of the spectrum because they have enough awareness, they find the motivation. A lot of them do end up finding the motivation because they realize that they're, quote-unquote, different, and they want to do something. So a lot of them do end up becoming successful. But I have to say, she really, really is an exception. She, you know, she's amazing. She's certainly amazing.
She's certainly amazing, and some of her books are wonderful for folks that may not even have any relationship to autism. Her book, Hypothesizing How Animals Might Think, I think it's called Thinking in Pictures or something, it's just a wonderful read for anybody.
Oh, I think so. I agree. All right, so we're almost out of time, Topher. So can you tell us where to find Autism Village?
So it's easy enough. We're online at www.autismvillage.com, and you can also search us out or link to our social media pages from our homepage, and we're active on Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest and Instagram and all those sorts of places as well.
Great.
The first app will launch this summer, so we'll announce that on our website, and there's a place right on the homepage as well to enter your name and email address and get regular updates from us about what we're doing and what's going on.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Topher. This was absolutely great. I'm so excited to share this with everybody. And I'm going to have a blog post ready, and I'm going to send you the blog post, and it's going to have the embedded podcast on there. So thank you so much for taking your time to do this interview. You provided so much. And you know what? People with folks like you, there's help. There's help for families that are in a situation like you were and where I was. It's great. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for saying that, and thank you for having me.
All right. You have a wonderful day. Everyone, take care, be well, and talk to you next week. Bye for now.